is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special New Year's Eve edition of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. I am your host, once again, Nick Sesento, flying solo yet again as the Celtics finish off their brief three-game West Coast road trip by dropping an egg, a fat turd, at the AT&T Center to the San Antonio Spurs. Losing 120 to 111 in a game that the Celtics had pretty much in control for the entirety of the first half, amassing double-figure leads over the Spurs in both the first quarter and the second quarter, yet giving up an incredible, unbelievable, wouldn't believe it unless you sat here on New Year's Eve and watched it yourself, 46-point third quarter to the San Antonio Spurs. And gave up the lead for good. Tried to make it competitive late in the game, late in the fourth quarter. Tried to pull a Memphis Grizzlies and snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. And as I mentioned, and my co-host Joe Chiquette mentioned on the previous show, this was not going to work against teams that are well-coached with elite talent. And while the San Antonio Spurs have some old talent and were missing one of their key pieces in Rudy Gay, who did not play tonight, the San Antonio Spurs are still a formidable team that you can't play around with. The Boston Celtics played around. They played with fire. They got burnt, finished off 2018 with a whimper in true Boston Celtics underachieving fashion, got brutalized by the San Antonio Spurs in a sad, pathetic, just disgusting 46-point defensive letdown in the third quarter alone to the San Antonio Spurs, who went on to win the game 120 to 111. 46 points in the third quarter from the San Antonio Spurs, who scored 46 points in the first half. Two quarters combined. 46 points in any quarter allowed by any team, whether it's the Boston Celtics or the Phoenix Suns, or name the worst team you can possibly think of in the history of the NBA. Allowing 46 points in the third quarter is unacceptable, and that's exactly what the Boston Celtics did tonight. Coming out of the gates, looking engaged, as I mentioned, amassing 10-point leads in both the first and second quarter, then dropping the ball literally, figuratively, metaphorically, metaphysically, in every way possible, realistically, in the third quarter, and could not bring the game back, even despite late-game attempts. Terry Rozier hit three threes in a row that made the Celtics look like maybe there were signs of life, and then reverted back to the same thing Terry Rozier has been doing all season long, which is pull up threes in transition where there could have been better opportunities. And as I and other hosts have discussed on the show, the Boston Celtics got complacent. And once they amassed leads or gathered leads, accumulated leads, they, as they frequently do, just decided to fall back and shoot first look, meaning not really any passing or minimal passing in the first pass and then a shot. First look, minimal ball movement, jump shots from deep and from mid-range. Just ridiculous shots when they could have, when the Boston Celtics could have continued to attack the basket, could have been aggressive, could have forced the issue, put pressure on the rim, put pressure in the paint. I did actually listen to the nationally broadcast, Players Only, NBA TV, broadcast as opposed to streaming the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, which is what I do on most nights when I watch these games, because I prefer to listen to my hometown, even though I live in Florida, prefer to listen to my hometown radio or hometown broadcast from Boston. I prefer to listen to Mike Gorman and Brian Scalabrine over nearly any of the national broadcasts. But I said, hey, it's New Year's Eve. I'm getting ready to go out. I'm going to put it on the big screen. The nationally broadcast game had some decent commentary. I mean, decent as far as decent is concerned, from Greg Anthony and Steve Smith from the Miami Heat, old school Steve Smith, Dennis Scott from the Orlando Magic, and, of course, Candace Parker, one of my favorite WNBA players of all time. Used to have a crush on Candace Parker, still do. Never understood why she married Sheldon Williams. Unfortunately, I heard that she divorced Sheldon Williams. Never liked to hear about anybody getting divorced, but Candace Parker, fantastic WNBA player and beautiful woman. Anyways, commenting on the Boston Celtics game, and they said many of the same things that we have been saying here on CLNS Media, that Celtics fans have been saying. Why do the Boston Celtics get complacent? And why does their shot selection, when they're capable with a little bit of ball movement, with running their offense, of getting good-looking shots, of throwing up terrible baskets, getting complacent when they seem to have the game in hand? And trust me, that first half where they had a lead, it could have been a lot worse for the San Antonio Spurs had the Boston Celtics had better shot selection in the first half. And it could have also been a lot better for the San Antonio Spurs if the San Antonio Spurs hadn't missed so many shots. So the Boston Celtics could have theoretically either won this game or got blown out entirely, hinging on that third quarter. This show will probably be abbreviated. I'm sure the listeners that are out there live have something to do on New Year's Eve as I do, so I will not be sticking around. If the Boston Celtics had won, you may have convinced me to stick around and talk some of the, you know, typical banter and chatter that happens on the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show when there's a win or at least a contested game. But this was a real turd from the Boston Celtics, a real goose egg. Reminds me of the scene from Billy Madison where they're setting paper bags of poop on fire. And Billy Madison, Adam Sandler's character, Billy Madison said, hey, this looks like a nice piece of shit. Well, that's what we got from the Boston Celtics tonight. A nice piece of shit in the third quarter in the form of a 46-point defensive lapse. Sorry, pardon my French. It's New Year's Eve. I would have liked to have ended 2018 with a Celtics win, or at least a better Celtics showing than what we got tonight. I will say, however, because it's obligatory, before I go to the switchboard, I will be taking at least one call tonight because we do appreciate our callers. And if this caller is who I think it is, I would spare some time anyway, even if I weren't on the air, to talk to the caller. But I will go through something very quickly. Jaylen Brown had a fantastic night tonight. It was nice to see him come out of his shell. Season high, 30 points altogether, and a career first half high, 18 points. It was the Jaylen Brown show in the first half of the Boston Celtics. Not quite as much in the second half, but Jaylen Brown did his thing with a defensive presence, had a couple of blocks in addition to his 30 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, was efficient from the field, 10 for 15, fantastic game from him. But that's about the only player on the Boston Celtics that you can really give that much credit to. Kyrie Irving slept through most of the game, 16 points, which is, you know, a lot less than what you would have needed from Kyrie Irving to defeat the San Antonio Spurs, who are currently in 8th place in the Western Conference. On the road, Kyrie Irving, 16 points, 8 assists. Marcus Morris with a nice 18 points doing Marcus Morris things, just not enough for the Boston Celtics. Did have a nice dribble step-back three-pointer in the first half when the Boston Celtics actually decided to play basketball. But and then, of course, had some of his timely shots late in the game, but just wasn't enough, not enough of a team effort. Terry Rozier, nice game off the bench, 15 points. 5 assists in his 20 minutes. Like I said, dropped a couple of three threes in a row, then reverted back to the pull-ups. Boston Celtics allowing this game to just completely slip by. It was a winnable game. It would have been a contested game. It would have been a tough game, but it was completely winnable without Rudy Gay, with an older lineup. But it really wasn't even the old heads for the San Antonio Spurs that cooked the Boston Celtics. It was guys like Derek White, Bryn Forbes. Don't even know how to pronounce his first name. It's spelled B-R-Y-N. Bryn Forbes. Davis Bertans. I mean, these are the guys. And if I never would have heard of these guys if the Boston Celtics hadn't played the San Antonio Spurs tonight. Maybe I'm just ignorant to basketball. But these are the guys that cooked the Boston Celtics. Derek White, 22 points. Forbes, 15. And 17 from Davis Bertans, including 5 for 8 from 3. Timely threes that just cut off any Boston Celtics run at any point in the game once they lost control of this game. There was a Bertans 3, it just seemed to be. And the NBA TV crew, the players-only crew, commented on it. They were calling it before the shots even went, and they must have known something that I guess maybe Brad Stevens didn't know, because he sure had a few uncontested shots for a guy that can shoot three-pointers like that. But I guess that's how you give up 46 points in the third quarter. And before I get to the toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771, I'd like to remind everybody that this episode, as is every episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Postgame Show, sponsored by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, and if it didn't, it would either be on life support or dead. A place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic north end, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines, who is not looking as stylish on the sidelines as he did in Memphis. We sure would like to have him on the court tonight, because I don't know if the Boston Celtics would have collapsed entirely with one of their gritty, you know, glue guys like Aaron Baines to instill them at least some type of heart, because they sure didn't have one tonight. They were like the Cowardly Lion. Which is the one from The Wizard of Oz that didn't have a heart? Was it the Cowardly Lion or was it the Tin Man? One of them didn't have a heart. One of them didn't have a brain. The Boston Celtics didn't seem to have either tonight in a 120-111 loss. But make sure to hit up the Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that visit the north end of Boston throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a north end landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. If you would like to get a Gordon Hayward hipster comb over or an Aaron Baines faded undercut man bun. And with that, I'm going to go to A62. I assume this is my man, Isaiah. Isaiah, this is you. Please tell me it's you. Make me feel better about this game, or at least misery made love company. So explain to me why I should feel really bad about this game. What's up, Isaiah?
What's up, brother? What's going on with you? Happy New Year to you and to all of you.
Happy New Year, my friend. It's good
there.
To hear from you. I'm a little bit under the weather, but, you know, when I get to hear from good callers and good friends like you, Isaiah, it picks me up a little bit, even if the game was a stinker, to say the least.
to say the least, exactly. I don't know what to say about this game. This game was disturbing, to say the least. I mean, that third quarter was ridiculous. That 16-0 run in the third quarter was ridiculous.
22-2 run. Even worse than that. Yeah.
That's even worse. I tried to take the better side of it. that's bad, man. And the way they scored, like, they kept hitting the same corner. They kept running the same play, hitting the same corner three, or getting right to the basket and laying it in. I mean, we had no front court defense, no basket defense, no paint defense. I don't know. They just snoozed through this one, and it's starting to get late early. You know, I don't really know how to look at this team, except other than very flawed. And who would have thought that? Who would have thought that with the amount of talent that was on this team that we would still be as flawed as we are? You know, I'm really starting to think that the team is somewhat top-heavy. And can't really sustain, at least not on the championship level, with what they have this year. And that leads me to the bigger question that we're going to have with the Seas, this year. What is Danny going to do about it? We all know that he's stockpiling talent in order to, you know, make we think he's stockpiling talent to make a significant run at Anthony Davis in the offseason. But does that mean that the rest of this season is going to be for naught? I mean, is it just going to be like we had last year where, you know, we had injuries last year and whatever the team gave us, we were great with. and they fought and battled all the way to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. But now I'm starting to think that it's going to be that kind of year, except not with the same result, because this team, it needs an infusion or a shakeup or something, because as much as we all thought that this lineup was going to be awesome, it's really not.
No. No, three of their last eight games since that 8-0 run. And granted, you know, they had the three games on the road, you know, these three games, Western Conference teams, all teams that, you know, are either, you know, in contention currently or looking to contend for playoff spots. Even the Memphis Grizzlies couldn't, you know, overlook the Memphis Grizzlies, almost lost to the Memphis Grizzlies. And that was one of the big takeaways from that game was you can't play like this against, you know, teams that matter. And, you know, no matter what the, you know, San Antonio Spurs, they started out. I overlooked the San Antonio Spurs to a degree because they started out not looking very good, somewhere, you know, near the bottom. Although there's so much parity in the Western Conference, I guess it doesn't even really matter, because aside from teams like the Phoenix Suns, you know, a couple of really bad teams, you know, they're, you know, after the top eight in the Western Conference, there's another four teams that could conceivably end up in that, you know, eighth, seventh, or sixth seed, you know, that are all within, you know, a couple of games of that, you know, of what would be seeding. I know it's early to talk playoffs, so I say that every show, but, you know, you look at teams that are contending, and as you said, it's getting late early. This is, you know, we're starting to see what, you know, teams are made of, what's happening with teams, and as I mentioned on the last show, that trade deadline, that is, you know, it's not getting any further away. It's only getting closer, and you know, Danny Ainge is going to make a move this season. If this season is not just for naught, as you mentioned, Isaiah, you know, and wants to actually do something. Because listen, whatever I was going to say before, scratch all that. I don't know if Boston Celtics fans are going to take whatever, you know, Danny Ainge or whatever this team, whatever Brad Stevens, whatever this conglomeration of players gives them. I think fans in Boston, I think Boston Celtics fans all over the country, all over the world are expecting, you know what I'm saying, at least the, you know, getting at least as far as they got last season, given, you know, having not lost any talent or any, you know, significant, you know, talent, and having added both Kyrie Irving, who didn't, you know, really have an injury that should change his game, and Gordon Hayward, who did, but who you'd hope after, you know, a full year off, you know what I mean, from the league, rehabilitation, and then, you know, nearly half a season now of re-acclimating himself to the league, would be able to give you, you know, a little bit more consistently than he is now. But I'm not even going to put this one on Gordon Hayward. They had enough talent to beat the San Antonio Spurs tonight, and they had leads, and they just didn't do it. This is completely a heart thing right now, is the way that I see this Boston Celtics team. There's plenty of talent on this team for them to beat any team on their schedule. Can they beat any team on their schedule in a seven-game series? I don't know. Maybe they can't beat, you know, the Golden State Warriors or some of those other teams, but they have the talent to beat the San Antonio Spurs in a late December game on New Year's Eve. Isaiah, I mean, this is pathetic. They had double digit leads, a 12 point lead in the second quarter. No reason for that. No reason to then give up a 46 point. So how do you give up a 46 point third quarter? Some teams don't even score 46 points in three quarters. You know, throughout the, you know, going into the fourth quarter, I've seen teams with only 46 points and they got it in one third quarter. That's not Boston Celtics basketball at all. There's something we're not seeing, or something that's bigger than what we're just seeing on the court going on here, because this team just has zero heart. I mean, aside from a couple of guys, your guy Marcus Smart, you know, I like what some guys are doing individually on given nights, but as a team, they just don't have any. They're not showing me anything.
No, I mean, they're having defensive lapses out there. Like, dude, I saw this one play that coming down the stretch, important critical play coming down the stretch, and Tatum doesn't even know where he is. He's playing the zone. Everyone else is playing man-to-man. They don't know if they're switching or if they all just seem lost right now for whatever reason. There's no traffic cop out there that's really helping out the defense. I know Marcus is playing great. You know, I think he's playing great, at least defensively, you know, but I think a lot of the troubles come from the front court. I'm really not satisfied with the front court play this year. And I think as Celtics fans, we all want to root for those players on our team. And we all wanted guys like Tice and Baines to come out, and expected them after one season with us to have the same that that's what we were going to get. And I don't think we're getting that from either one of them. Granted, they're both one was coming back from injury. One's coming back from injury, and the other one is injured now as far as with his hand. But I'm not really – I don't like our front court play. And like I've mentioned before when we've called – when I've called in, I really don't like the way that they've handled Yabusele. He was also, let's not forget, a number, 15 pick in the draft. He's supposed to be serviceable right now. You know, this is his third year in the league, actually his fourth because he spent the league a year overseas. And if he needed that much time –
Has it been that long for Yabusele?
Yeah, Yabu came in the year that we had three picks in the first round, I think. And then Yabu,
wow.
I think his first year. Yeah, Yabu, I expected to have more from him right now. I expected more.
So he's been curated. He's received the long training, you know, regiment for, you know, entering the NBA.
He
spent that year in France or wherever he played ball in Europe. And then he spent some, you know, obviously spent some G League time, and then, you know, has made his way into, you know, light rotation spots here for the Celtics. And you're right, not really given much other than, you know, a nice, you know, open, you know, top of the key 3-pointer occasionally, and then of course the arrow dab or whatever it is, that little move that he was doing that, you know, that of course got the Twitter fiends all excited about it. But I mean, yeah, he's one of those picks, you know. Danny has made those picks before, and I think with the top picks, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, those, you know, those Jason Tatum, obviously, and the swindle that, you know, that he pulled on Philadelphia, you know, gave him a whole lot of capital, you know, where Danny could do no wrong when it came to picks, when it came to, you know, those things, you know, that type of thing. But I think, you know, Yabu, you know, maybe isn't, you know, one of those guys. I don't know how far, you know, Semi Ojeleye was so far down in the draft, you can't really, you know, call him, you know, he's an all upside, no downside type of pick. I'd like to see Robert Williams. Robert, I know knee has been kind of sore lately. That's why he didn't make the trip here. But maybe some Robert Williams play, you know, because these guys, when you get manhandled by, you know, Lamar Aldridge, I mean, you know, I mean, not that he's not a good post player, not that he's not a solid,
he's a really
sturdy
good
guy.
Player.
He is a really good player, but you have to have somebody. I mean, Al Horford just isn't enough. And, you know, Daniel Tice is a power forward. Daniel Tice is a stretch four. He's not a guy that can really do, you know, he's not a big enough body now that, you know, the small ball NBA, you know, the pure small ball NBA phase has kind of moved. And now you're having kind of a resurgence of, you know, big men. They can still shoot and do things that, you know, the stretch big men, you know, of
and
the small ball.
The
but
curve
they're
on that.
Yes, because the Boston Celtics are still, you know, small ball. You know, they still, you know, playing Daniel Tice at five, and on a team where, you know, Lamar Aldridge, who was a power forward when he first came into the league, is now playing, you know, center, and he's considered a fairly, you know, big center. He's a post center. He's a guy that can muscle you on in the paint. And guys like Daniel Tice, who are built kind of like long, small forwards, you know, if we were to compare them to, you know, the 90s era, they would be like a Stacey Augman type, you know, lane type of guy. And they're coming in playing five. And it's just not, it's, you know, it's, it works in some situations, but it gets exploited. It got exploited by Marc Gasol the other night. It got exploited by Clint Capella easily the night before that, the game before that. Something has to be done there. Either you know,
our
find
big men
somebody
are scrappy,
on the roster.
But they're not, our big men are scrappy, but they're not what we need. There's a new four in the league that's mobile, strong, and can shoot. And although guys like Tice, they give you the energy, he doesn't make enough shots. Kind of like the same problem with Yabu, except Yabu still doesn't understand. I think Yabu can be really good at defense, but he still doesn't fully understand it because he doesn't have the playing time. So guys like Tice get manhandled, and then when you go big with Baines, this year he doesn't seem to have the same athleticism as he did last year. He seems to be lumbering, getting there a step short, committing more fouls. So I really think that we're behind the curve where it comes to at the four position. We're either playing a guy who the time has passed him, and he's either a five in the system, which you see Stevens trying to use with guys like Tice, who play him at the five, or they just can't shoot well enough to play with someone else. And offensively, we don't want to go with two big men who are lumbering out there. I really don't know what they're going to do for the rest of the season if they keep this lineup the way it is. And we definitely have the pieces to move in order to try to plug some holes or right some wrongs in order for us to really compete and contend this year. The question is, what does Ainge want to do long term in order to see what he wants to do with the roster? Because if he's waiting for Anthony Davis, there's no help coming, and they're just going to have to figure it out. And if they don't figure it out because they don't have the right mix, then this season is going to go for naught. And I think personally they're wasting Kyrie Irving's MVP season. So,
you know what? And I mentioned that, I think, previously as well. I would consider what Kyrie Irving is doing now that he is more of a complete player, now that he's a guy that is willing to, you know, play man defense and actually effective
play
man defense.
Defense.
I mean,
yeah.
He's expanded his game to that. Yes, he's expanded his game to that level to where he is now a complete player. He's not a liability. Like when the trade first occurred, the Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving trade, it was almost, you know, the only advantage defensively speaking when comparing Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving was that, well, at least Kyrie Irving's not 5'7" or 5'9", whatever they list Isaiah at. I think everybody agrees that he's not quite even what he's listed at. But regardless, at least he's not, you know, 5'something". You know, Kyrie Irving's what, 6'2", 6'3"? At least he's not going to, you know, physically be a physical disadvantage. But, you know, and nobody really gave him that much credit for being defensively, in terms of his defensive mechanics, his defensive play, that much better, just because he just, you know, didn't put the effort into it. This season, he's putting the effort into it. He's having career highs in, I think, rebounds, assists and steals. You know, like you said, this is a Kyrie Irving, and he's not, you know, giving up that much in the points. His points are still where they've generally, I believe, always been. I haven't looked at his, you know, his season stats, you know, recently. But, you know, given what he's done in recent games, I don't think his stats have really dropped off in terms of points. Somewhere around like 23, 24 points a game. I'm pretty close, I would imagine, with his stats there, which is around, you know, what his career average would be. Definitely an MVP, but you know what? You can't really you don't get that grassroots type of MVP support from, you know, from the fans and from other teams when your team underperforms, when your team, you know, it doesn't perform up to expectations. And Kyrie Irving is, like you said, this is wasting an MVP caliber season from Kyrie Irving because the team is not giving him, I mean, even if there were a couple of games behind where you'd expect them to be, if they had dropped a couple of games that you would have expected them to win, you know what I mean? They still might have an argument, but they're just dropping games that they've had in the bag and then just let go. They're giving up 46-point quarters. I can't say that enough. That will stick with me as one of, you know, and I've been watching the Celtics since well before the 2008, you know, championship team. I'm a little bit older than some of the hosts here, not quite as old as, you know, other hosts. You know, they actually remember watching Larry Bird play. I'm not quite that old. I've watched, you know, the highlights. I remember him vaguely in the back of my mind as a very small child, but I didn't pay that close attention to Larry. Wasn't able to, you know, internalize prime Larry Bird because I was just too small, you know what I'm saying, too little to internalize that. But I do remember those tough years. I do remember the loss in the Eastern Conference Finals to the New Jersey Nets. You know, I remember some of those lean years. I remember some of those, you know, those wasted picks. And, you know, the Boston Celtics aren't going there anytime soon, but this is the year that I think it was expected they were going to do something. They have the all-star, the superstar caliber player, MVP caliber player, Kyrie Irving, to lead them at the helm. And for some reason, it's just not working. And as much as we can talk about, you know, the big man, the front court play, we're disappointed with the front court play, especially their bigs, their four and their fives, and their rotation of how they figure out their four and their fives. There's still something intangible that's missing from this team when they can come out playing the way they played against the Memphis Grizzlies for that first, you know, basically three quarters of the Memphis Grizzlies game, or come out playing the way they did against the San Antonio Spurs team in the third quarter. There's something else there, Isaiah. And I mean, maybe you can help me figure it out. Maybe there's just too many, you know, too many alpha males, too many alpha guys. I don't want to say alpha males because that makes it sound like it's one of these toxic masculinity things. And that's not what it is. Maybe there's just too many guys that are looking to be that guy and they're not doing it. It seems like they can share the ball well enough. It's just I think that they settle too much. They don't attack the basket when necessary.
They settle too often
for jump shots and for threes. First
deep
look
threes,
jump shot
like
threes.
Step back,
yes.
James Harden type threes.
Yes. Do you see that as well? Am I the only one? I mean, they mentioned it as well on the Players Only NBA TV broadcast. So I know that I'm not the only person seeing it, but do you see it as well? You know, Isaiah, as a longtime caller, loyal listener to CLNS Media, I respect your analysis as much as I respect anybody else's. Do you see this as well? I know I'm not crazy.
No, yeah, that's definitely been a problem, but that's always been a problem with the Celtics. The problem is the defense. That's where they're not hanging their hat on anything. You know, the offense has always been spotty. They always go into offensive droughts, and it seems like come out of it with explosions, especially when Kyrie comes into and out of the offense. That's a given. I get that. But the 16-0 run, the 22-2 run, and that's especially coming out of halftime, I mean, that's just inexcusable. That's just effort. And I think a lot of times other people have said it too and questioned the effort on this team from everyone. It seems like they're not all moving as one like they were last year. They were in unison. They had a mindset, and as guys went down, they galvanized around who was left, and they just moved forward as a team. The mindset was undeniable. But it seems like for whatever reason this year, they're not on the same page. You might get two guys, three guys playing at the same time while two guys are out in space. It doesn't seem like they're all there, like they're all pulling for the same goal. You know what I did today? I listened to the Celtic beat and that listened to the ones they had last week with Gary Washburn, and he did a great job of painting a picture of what could be going on or what might be going on or what is going on in the Celtic locker room and how different mindsets, how much of a different mindset each player had and what's going on in their own individual career. And I'm really wondering, is something like that really getting onto the court? Are off-court things getting onto the court? Are off-court issues, problems, because they're so young, getting onto the court and stopping these guys from playing is one, because they really aren't. And the mix just seems bad right now, especially on the defensive end, where we're supposed to be holding – that's where we are. That's where we live, is as a scrappy team.
I feel like that, you know, and I haven't listened to the Celtics beat with Washburn, but I trust Washburn as, you know, a sports reporter, as a Celtics, you know, beat reporter. I trust his word. I trust what Washburn has to say. I trust Wash. I haven't listened to those Celtics beats. But I don't see anything on the court that looks like there's disunity amongst these guys, like there's any acrimony or animosity or anything between these guys. On the surface, it looks like they don't enjoy playing with each other.
Yeah.
So it's not an issue of their
shortcomings.
Say what now?
There's nothing out there that makes it, like, we have shortcomings on the team. We all knew that, but we could make up for it with the amount of talent that Danny put together. But they can't make up for the shortcomings because it seems like they don't even want to play together or are all playing together at the same time. I don't know what's going on, man.
Is there something that you see on the court that makes you think that they don't want to, that this group doesn't want to play together? Because it doesn't seem – I don't seem to get that feeling from them. What I seem to get is kind of ambivalent sometimes, like maybe they would just rather not be playing a game right now. Like, hey, I'd rather be, you know, playing FIFA, you know, 2019 right now, you know, than being on the court or whatever. Like they'd rather be doing something else, Fortnite, you know, pick something, you know, Netflix, watching Bird Box, I don't know. They'd rather be doing anything else other than playing, you know, an NBA basketball game for, you know, a couple $100,000, depending on, you know, the player. Like, they just could be, they could be less interested is what I see. I don't know if I see any kind of disunity amongst these guys, like Terry Rozier thinking, man, I don't want to play behind this MF Kyrie Irving. That's just not my steed. I just don't see that. I don't see Marcus Smart in any way not being a team type of guy. I don't see Al Horford in any way not being
paid.
A team type of
Marcus
guy.
Is paid
I see. So well, yes, I agree with that. So you think it's from the players that haven't been paid then? But is there something that you see? And I'm not asking you that question because I'm challenging your assertion. I just wanted to know if there's something that you're seeing that I don't. Have you seen anything like that on the court this season? Because I think that's interesting.
I don't know.
You know,
I don't. Like I said, I don't know. I heard it today. I saw a couple of times where, remember the play where Terry got fouled on the three-pointer and he went to the line. He could have made that extra pass to JB in the corner, you know, it's small things like that, though. It's not anything like, Rondo looking off looking off Ray Allen. You know, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that that's blatant, but there are certain times where you're watching a game where you see somebody go for self instead of making the extra pass. And to me, I don't really see that as that much of a big deal, because it doesn't, because for the most part we have pretty good ball movement until we don't, you know. So
I don't know
how true that is, that there are things that are going on off the court. I don't know. I just know that I'm not, for a team that has this much talent, I'm not seeing them play together. They're not playing together the way they should to overcome their shortcoming. Because even in the beginning of the season, if you're going to start an extra wing at the four, which Jason Tatum essentially is, if you're going to start an extra wing at the four, then you got to play. The team has to know that we all have to play extra hard in order to maintain the balance, because we don't have a real shot blocker in there or an extra big to clog the paint. You know, so it's little things like that that just come from playing, when you know you have to give extra effort because you're outgunned or outmanned. And it seems like at times the team just doesn't want to do it for all four quarters, which is understandable. It's just happening way too much.
Getting killed on switching on every single pick and roll, getting killed, you know, with the switch man. You can't
not
do that on every
single.
And you know, nothing really manifest, and nothing really kind of signifies your point of a team that's not playing in unison, that's not playing as, you know, one fluid, you know, being out there, as one fluid team out there, is there was one play, I don't know if it was in the third quarter, second quarter, somewhere towards the middle of the game, and the Boston Celtics were, you know, moving, and there was a pass, and there were two guys literally right on top of each other that literally bumped into each other to grab the pass. And it ended up being a turnover, and all three commentators on the NBA TV Players Only broadcast all said bad spacing. They just all said bad spacing. Now, these guys, I mean, Steve Smith, Candace Parker, who I love. I just think Candace Parker is just a fantastic person all around. I love her. She's gorgeous. And she's a good basketball player. And now I forgot who the other. Oh, Greg Anthony. And you know, none of them are fantastic commentators, but they're all. I respect
no,
all of
no.
them as basketball players. Yes, as basketball players. And when they comment on things, they you know a lot of things. You know, and I'm not a fantastic broadcaster. I'm on a podcast, so I can't talk. You know, criticize anybody's broadcast. But when they point out some of those things, you know that's you know the way a player would look at the game. You know what I mean? And you can respect the you know players as a, you know not that you don't respect other guys like Mike Gorman who wasn't a player or whatever. But you know we you know you can you respect different things about different you know broadcasters
that
for
inside,
different reasons.
Inside.
Yeah, the inside
the
and
inside,
you know
inside.
They pointed out that. That they put poor spacing, poor movement on that play, pointing out the you know the insistence on basically not putting any pressure on the rim, just constantly you know falling back. And these are things that I think in the back of my head every single game, especially the games that are you know too close for comfort that the Celtics should have against lesser teams that the Celtics should have blown away. You know what I mean? Aside from that brief streak where they were blowing teams out of the water. You know, there have been games where they played down to their competition. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but it shouldn't be that close, you know, regardless. And it's in one of the frequent themes is just no pressure on the rim. No pressure in the paint, no pressure on the basket. Nobody's going to the rim. The ball movement stops, like you said, it's good until it's not. The ball movement stops, it's you know, one pass and then it's a you know, shot from whether it's a contested shot, it's a deep shot, it's a shot that's, you know, kind of on the move, the momentum is not right.
It's
not
a hero
good
shot.
Yeah, it's a hero shot, and that's one of the things I don't like about Terry Rozier's game this season. The three shots that he made in a row, those three 3-pointers he made in a row late in the game, they were within the flow of the offense. And then the two that he missed, because he went 3-for-5, were those, you know, just ridiculous dribble, pull up, and, you know, shoot with, you know, not entirely contested.
Two were in the flow. One of them was a walk-up three that he hit. But two of them
did he still hit? Yeah, did he still hit? And then a couple, and then the other two that he missed were those hero shots.
Exactly.
Those are things that can't those things just can't happen with the Boston Celtics. Poor spacing, poor, you know, ball movement when the ball movement breaks down, and there's just basically like little ISO sets for each and for each player. It's like, does Brad Stevens plan these little, you know, these little slumps there where they say, okay, we're just going to play ISO ball now. Jason Terry, ever since he wore that headband, it was a disaster for Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier, you go out there and score your points. All right, you know, Jalen, you go out there and score your points. You know, XYZ, you go out there and score your points. Is that what he's doing? Because that's almost what it looks like. It looks like they're just going up there, chucking shots. You know, they're not even really moving the ball. It's first look shots, not much ball movement, early in the shot clock. And, you know, that's where the game just seems to get out of control for the Boston Celtics, especially in games like this against teams that are competitive like the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, and to be honest, I like, how do you think that they could go about fixing it? Like, how do you see this as something that's fixable, or like, how do you think that Baines coming back is gonna be a big help, a little help, help some, help not at all? Like, how do you think that they're gonna go about fixing this issue?
Baines, I think he's too. There's too much of an impact from Baines to say, yeah, Baines is not gonna help you at all. I think Baines is going to give you, you know, something, you know. But is Baines a guy that I'm going to hang my hat on for the Boston Celtics to solve the Celtics' problems and you know and salvage this season into something, you know, worth talking about when the season is over, to meet expectations? I don't know, because I think we're pretty dangerously on the spot here, where, you know, I think it's safe to say, you know, you wouldn't be wrong. I mean, maybe it's too early. It's too early to throw away the season and say, yeah, the season is done. The Celtics don't look good. It's over. But I think that, you know, for those fans that are willing to go that far or that are willing to say that, I don't think they're wrong. A couple of weeks ago, I would have said, man, you're crazy. It's too early to say that. But, you know, and I'm not going to go on that limb myself and say that. But the fans that may say that, I'm not going to call them crazy anymore, because I think that they may have they may be right, that there's something inherently broken about this team, and maybe it's not going to get fixed. I still think that it probably can. I can't tell you. I don't know what it is. Whether it's something inside. There's enough talent. If we can say, and I'll let you jump in after this idea. If we can say, you and I, that there's enough talent on this team to do X, Y, and Z to beat the San Antonio
Spurs
or to win, you know, 55 or 60 games, then there should be an answer on that roster right now. It's a matter of getting them to play together. Up to their full potential. So the answer should be on the right. So, yeah, I'll say there's something on there. I don't know what it is, because I'm not Brad Stevens. I'm not, you know, a basketball genius. I just host, you know, the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. So I don't know. Would a trade also possibly work? I mean, because you mentioned assets, and I think some of those assets, Jalen Brown, Terry Rozier.
Yeah, 25.
Terry Rozier.
How many did he have tonight, Jalen?
Jalen had 30 points.
Yeah, he had 30 tonight. I mean, that's great for him.
And Terry Rozier, I think, had something like – Terry Rozier had like 15 points, I think, off the bench as well. So, you know, Terry Rozier had a decent game.
They have assets.
But they have that. But when you get to the postseason, you have to do like a sign-and-trade if you want to keep some of those assets, because Marcus Morris, I believe, is a free agent. Terry Rozier is a free agent. You know, a lot of these guys, they're going to be – you know, Aaron Baines, I believe, also a free agent. I don't know if it's a player option or if it's – just straight up free agency. His contract just ends. I don't know if you got a 1-year deal or a one plus one. But, you know, there's a lot of these guys. And, yeah, Danny Ainge, I'm sure, is trying to accumulate assets when it comes to, you know, these players. But when they, you know, walk in free agency or they hit free agency, I mean, they no longer have as much value. Maybe getting rid of some of these guys that are going to be free agents at the end of the season, knowing that a guy like Nikola Vucevic, and that was somebody that I've heard mentioned, you know, throughout the season, he's coming up on his contract. You know, trade rentals for rentals, guys who on expiring contracts for a guy in a position of need, you know, that can fill, you know, the big man spot, can grab rebounds, but can also, you know, hit three-pointers. maybe that's a temporary answer until you can do something. I've heard something. Maybe you know something about this, Isaiah. The Rose Rule is what I've heard it referred to, that there can't be a trade for Anthony Davis because of something with Kyrie Irving's contract that's preventing Anthony Davis from coming to the Celtics. Do you know anything about this? I mean, I've tried to research it. It just seems so convoluted when you get into salary cap things that sometimes I just put my hands up and I say, I don't understand what this is trying to tell me right now, why Anthony Davis would be prevented. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, that's like a weird rule. And I'm like you, I've heard about it, but I'm not well researched on it to even speak about it. But it just says the long and the short of it is that we can't get Anthony Davis even if we wanted to right now. We're stuck with this team. If we're waiting for him, we're stuck till the postseason, which means that we'd have the same team that going into the playoffs that we have right now. You know, if we're playing that game, personally, I think the Celtics' problem is that we just need another Al. We need another switchable big man who can guard the perimeter, who can guard the pick and roll, and can rebound and block shots. We need another Al. He doesn't have to be super spectacular. He just has to be another Al. And like I was on with Bobby and those guys the other night, when they did their show, and I said that's why I thought time to get one was the last draft. They had a bunch of switchable bigs that could hit the three, put the ball on the deck. They could do things, and I love Robert Williams. I love the Time Lord. You know, he's awesome. He has great hops. He reminds me of DeAndre Jordan. He's great,
Jordan,
but he doesn't have an offensive game. He's super raw with everything he does. And the difference between him and those other guys at the top of the draft that can actually put the ball on the floor, have offensive games, shoot jump shots, shoot three-pointers, you know, those guys are rare. And I thought that's why the Celtics were exploring getting up to the top of the draft to see where they could go. And they unfortunately didn't pull the trigger or didn't want to pull the trigger or couldn't pull the trigger. And we came back with the same guys like Tice and Baines, and those guys are serviceable. But as you can see, they're not on Al's level, and not many guys are. And when you get your chance to get one of those guys, it makes a difference on your team, especially in today's basketball. We haven't been able to get one of those guys in free agency. The closest thing we have is a Tice to one of those energetic, rebounding, three-point shooting fours. You know, we don't have any of those guys on our team. Yabu was supposed to be our guy. He isn't quite there yet, you know. So I think our inability at the four to have one of those, it forces us to go smaller than we can afford to. And as we saw, we got a bunch of talented guys, but we don't have a lot of those guys on. Don't have that dog mentality to play the four in the NBA. And it's not their fault, you know, that they don't. I think it's just a flaw in the roster as far as how many wings we have. And the only way we can balance that out, if we want to fix that, is to trade some of the talent. And unfortunately, Anthony Davis is the apple of the eye. So I don't know. We're in a weird place, man. I don't know if anything's going to happen or if this is the team that we're going to have for the rest of the season. But your guess is as good as mine.
Definitely a downer to end 2018 with this type of loss to the San Antonio Spurs. I believe 120-111, a 46-point third quarter for the San Antonio Spurs after the Boston Celtics had double-digit leads in both the first and second quarters, just completely fell asleep on offense, completely fell asleep on defense. Isaiah, Happy New Year, my friend. Do you have any last words before I close up the show? I know I see one other caller on the switchboard. I'm going to see if that caller wants to get on the air before I close things up for New Year's, to get myself on the road, imbibe, maybe drink a little bit heavier than I had planned to after watching that that crap show of a Boston Celtics game in San Antonio tonight. I happen to be the skeleton crew working to cover the game, so I watched it. I volunteered to be the sacrificial lamb, the guinea pig, the one that gives up proud of my evening of debauchery on New Year's Eve, ringing in 2019 to watch this. And, of course, the Boston Celtics let me down. But anything else for us, Isaiah? It's always good to talk to you, always good to hear from you. Like I said, respect your analysis greatly. And, of course, our chats about basketball. Anything else for us tonight, Isaiah, before I bid you adieu along with 2018?
After all of that, I do want to say that we do have a talented team. And if we could put it all together, we could still challenge in 2019 and bring the title home. It's just a lot of work to be done. And maybe, as Gary Washburn implied, maybe it's a lot of work to be done in the locker room between those guys and Coach Stevens. And they can all get on the same page because the talent's there, you know, and they could definitely, you know, if they could put it together, you know, 2019 could be great for all of us, bring another title home to Boston, to the city of Boston. But the work, they got to put the work in, man. So let's just keep the faith. Hope that 2019 but comes in a lot better than 2018 went out. And I hope everybody makes it to the other side, and I see you guys on the other side of 2019. Go Seas.
Fantastic, as always. Isaiah, it's always great to hear from you, a longtime listener. Isaiah in Jersey, not sure where he is right now. He's one of those guys, likes to move around a lot. He's a busy man, an important guy, Isaiah in Jersey. Happy New Year, my friend. Always good to hear from you. I'm going to hit up this one last call, 617. Let's see if 617 area code Boston. Did you want to get on the air with us, 617?
Hey.
We have a couple minutes left in the show.
Hey, I just want to say this is Chuba, by the way. Nick, happy New Year. Thank you so much for
what's
giving
up, Chuba?
Up part of your holiday. Thank you so much for giving up part of your holiday. I know this wasn't fun to see them lose, but I just want to thank you for holding down the fort. Got one question.
Always.
One question that everybody wants to know about 2019. Are the Celtics gonna make the NBA finals? So I'll just put you on mute and see what you have to say.
Chuba, it's good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you in a while, so as always, on New Year's Eve, of all evenings, fantastic. I appreciate the love and appreciate you giving us a call. Are the Boston Celtics going to make the 2019, I guess it would be, NBA Finals? It sure doesn't look like it after watching them tonight, but, you know, I'm not going to be one of those negative Nancys that's going to close out 2018 with that type of negativity. So I'll go ahead and say, you know, the Boston Celtics still have the potential to get better. They have the potential to turn this thing around. And I think when it comes down to it, there are two elite teams in the Eastern Conference. That's the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Boston Celtics have already beaten both of those teams once. They have split their two games with each respective team. So they've shown they can compete with those teams. The next tier down, the 76ers, the Indiana Pacers, did lose a game to the Pacers, but have owned the Philadelphia 76ers. So I think, you know, it shows there's something you can see with these Boston Celtics. They get up for games against teams that they want to get up for teams that they, for some reason, that motivate them to play. And then other games, they just don't, you know, they seem to get complacent. And I think that's the big key word when it comes to how the Boston Celtics lose some of these games is this complacency. They stop doing all the other things needed to do to win games, stop attacking the basket, stop drawing fouls, stop putting pressure on defenses, and just bailing out with, you know, first-look shots. And if the Boston Celtics can figure out when to turn that switch like they did against Memphis, they got to do it a little bit earlier against teams like the Philadelphia or against the San Antonio Spurs and the Philadelphia 76ers. And any team they may have to play, especially in the Eastern Conference playoffs moving forward, teams that are going to give them a challenge because teams are looking at them and looking to give them their best shot every single night. But, yes, I think the Boston Celtics can. There is still a gap because none of those teams at the top, whether it's the Toronto Raptors or the Milwaukee Bucks, have players leading them. Well, I guess the Raptors now have Kawhi Leonard. He is a champion, so maybe that gets them over the hump to finally actually do something in the playoffs. But as a team, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Toronto Raptors have not done anything in the playoffs. So that gives the Boston Celtics, who also have a champion on their roster, Kyrie Irving, and a, you know, championship pedigree of a franchise, and having been to the Eastern Conference Finals now 2 years in a row with many of the players that are on the roster right now, like Marcus Smart, in Al Horford, those guys will give them an advantage moving forward. I think Gordon Hayward still has a lot of room to get better. He's not going to show everything right now. He's not going to be as good as he's going to get. So as Gordon Hayward gets better, maybe Gordon Hayward can be that second average Al. I don't think Gordon Hayward is going to be an all-star level player this year. If you're expecting him to be an all-star level player, that's a high expectation for a guy that just blew out his ankle. But I think that Gordon Hayward is not at the place where he's going to be come playoff time, and there will still be more to see from Gordon Hayward. And I do believe the Boston Celtics will work out their kinks that are holding them back right now. That's all I can say, because I am a Boston Celtics fan, and it would make me feel less if I didn't, although this game did have me angry enough to swear on the air. So I apologize to those of you. I hope everybody out there forgets this game, even though it's a poor way to ring out 2018. Just remember, there is still 2019. There is still the Patriots' first-round bye in the playoffs. The Boston Bruins are still playing hockey, so there's a lot to look forward to. Red Sox baseball is just around the corner. And, of course, the Boston Celtics will, I predict, will still make the Eastern Conference Finals and have just as good a chance as any team in the East to make the NBA Finals. And with that, your next game will be Tuesday, the 2nd of January, 2019. Minnesota will be visiting Boston at TD Garden. And we'd like to remind everybody that this show, like all shows this season, is sponsored by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines. Boston Barber and Tattoo is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that visit Boston's North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. And with that, I am your host, Nick Cicento, for all of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame staff and all the CLNS Media Boston Celtics or CLNS Media staff in general. We'd like to wish you a happy and safe New Year's. Throw back a beer for me, or if you don't do that, you know, smoke one for me. Do something for me. Just have fun for me. Hug your loved ones for me. CLNS Media, thanks for tuning in. Happy New Year.